welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest is Irina Lagunina, Associate Standards Editor and former Director and Special Projects Editor of the Russian Service here at RFERL. Welcome, Irina, and thanks for joining me today.
Sure, Steve. I'm very happy to be with your podcast again.
It's great to have you on the podcast again. The occasion, of course, is terrible. This coming Friday, February 24th, will mark 1 year since Russia launched its unprovoked invasion of Ukraine. The large-scale invasion followed nearly 8 years of war provoked by Moscow in the Donbass in eastern Ukraine. I'm going to try to keep my questions short. The first one is about Russian President Vladimir Putin's address to Parliament. Effectively, this is his State of the Nation speech, which he's set to deliver tomorrow, February 21st. Now, the speech is commonly known as Putin's annual address, and the Russian Constitution obliges the president to deliver it annually, but Putin did not do so in 2022. In fact, the last time he did was in April 2021. Now, also I was going to note that U.S. President Joe Biden is scheduled to speak in Warsaw several hours after Putin's address tomorrow, and that is still the case. But now Putin's address tomorrow comes after Biden's visit to Kyiv today. That was a surprise visit. I mean, there'd been talk that he might meet with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, possibly in Poland or possibly in Kyiv. And in fact, he did travel to Kyiv. So that's Biden's made many trips to Ukraine. He did so as vice president, but this is, of course, the first one as president. And we will And in his speech tomorrow, he'll also be talking about the war in Ukraine. And today, his visit and his words were a reflection of what he and the West say is kind of unflagging unity. Now, I don't want to suggest that Putin's speech will necessarily be an important one. Three things to keep in mind here. Because these things can be sort of overplayed. One is that Putin can be very repetitive, repeating the same narratives in successive speeches and remarks. The second is that these narratives, Putin's claims, his statements about history and about the present, are often skewed or simply false, particularly when it comes to Ukraine, both its history and what's happening there now. And the third is that while he does use speeches for signaling, both to Russians and to the West and the rest of the world, he often sends mixed signals and hides his actual plans and intentions. So nothing can necessarily be taken at face value. Now, all that said, Irina, I'm going to ask you not what you think he'll say necessarily, but what you'll be watching for or listening for when Putin delivers his address.
Well, Steve, it's really difficult to predict something that's going to be said or done by the head of an absolute authoritarian state where the normal flow of information and the normal accountability of people in power in front of the people of the country is non-existent. I would point out also several facts that surround this address that Putin is going to give tomorrow. There is a lot of speculation. There are a lot of speculations in Russia right now. What all this is going to be about? But the first interesting detail is that this time. The leaders of South Ossetia, Alan Gagloev, Abkhazia, Aslan Bzhania, and the head of Belarus, Alexander Lukashenko, will be present during his address, which created allegation that probably he might want to devote his speech to the further some sort of unification of those territories. And let me point out that South Ossetia and Abkhazia are two territories that were that are under Russian control and that used to be, and according to the international law, are still the territory of Georgia. And the talks about more close relationship or even unification with Belarus are going on for quite a long time. This process was started 25 years ago, but it never led to create of one union state, as sometimes they wanted to portray it. So, but the fact that those three heads of territories and state will be in Moscow to listen to Putin is very interesting. Further on, the other point that I wanted to point out is that the next day, February 27th, there will be a joint meeting of both chambers of the parliament. That means that they will probably come all together as one group to adopt something that Putin might propose, even though they are now saying that it's basically a technical meeting because they need to adopt several laws before the start, before March, but the coincidence is also very telling that Putin's address on the 21st of February and joint parliament meeting on the 22nd. So that's one, I'm just relaying here the kind of the discourse that's going on in Russia and the forecast that Russian media and analysts are trying to make right now. The second thing that is also very important to keep in mind is the symbolism of the date. February 21st, and this is exactly what caused some alarmist predictions of what Putin will say. February 21st is actually the start of the war with Ukraine for Putin. Because even though the full-scale aggression started on the 24th last year, February 21st was his address about Ukraine. And his suggestion to, or his desire to officially recognize so-called Luhansk National Republic and Donetsk National People's Republic. That's on February 21st, 2022. He made a speech and requested the parliament to recognize the independence of those territories that were breakaways, republics of Ukraine. And that was a very significant speech because in that speech, let us remember, he outlined that Ukraine is an artificial state, that it was created by Bolshevik communist leader Lenin, that Ukraine lacks the fundamental notion of statehood. I'm quoting him right now. He also called the split of the Soviet Union, he said it was more than a mistake. He claimed that Ukraine was thinking about creating its own nuclear weapons. And he claimed that NATO and US use Ukrainian territory for as their base. So that whole laid the ground for the aggression that started on the 24th. That was a very significant speech, and it's not a coincidence that he delivers another speech exactly a year after this. So the fact that he will make this speech as the first anniversary since his start of the war with Ukraine, it actually caused some people to think that he will announce a new wave of mobilization, that he even might announce the official war with Ukraine, because right now they don't call it war, they call it a special military operation. So all sorts of predictions, pretty alarmist, pretty dark for Russian future. So that also might be something that we might see tomorrow. Steve?
Thanks very much, Irina. Yeah, that's a great sort of overview. I have to agree wholeheartedly that there's no way the selection of February 21st as the date for this speech was a coincidence. As you said, the February 21st speech that he made last year was, a lot of people had in the West, most people believed that Russia would not go ahead and invade Ukraine or launch a large scale invasion of Ukraine, even though the United States and others were warning about this based on intelligence. And there were, I forget the number, but maybe 170,000 Russian troops amassed near the Ukrainian border. But it was really that speech, I think, that changed many people's minds and led them to think that, unfortunately, Putin would go ahead and order the invasion, or maybe he had already ordered it. But because, as you say, it was very dark. And he'd made some of the comments before, over the years and over the previous year or two in particular, saying that Ukraine was not really a state, saying it was created by the Bolsheviks. But he really put it all together in one, and his tone was very ominous. And it was really, people were just kind of very, very concerned after the speech, very alarmed. So whether that means this one, this year is clearly symbolism. Whether that means this speech tomorrow will be a big deal, we have yet to see. Possibility of new mobilization could be. Russia's conducting an offensive now in the Donbass in eastern Ukraine, but there's also talk of, will Russia try to conduct a bigger offensive with more troops coming across the border into Ukraine in the coming weeks or months? So, that's one thing that he could be preparing for. And as you say, I actually hadn't realized that those, that Lukashenko from Belarus and the de facto heads of South Ossetia and Abkhazia were going to be in Moscow for the speech. But that certainly, that seems like at least designed to make people think that something big is going to happen. And of course, with Belarus, I think Putin met with Lukashenko a few days ago. But there's been over the years, and particularly the past few years since elections in 2020 in Belarus and since the Russian invasion of Ukraine, there have been sort of stepped up efforts by Putin, by Russia to get Belarus closer. It never seems to happen. Real integration or even the kind of union state that they have on paper. But we'll see how it develops tomorrow. I would just point out that Putin is, or as I did point out in the intro to this, Putin, he does repeat things. He's big on symbolism. So, it's possible that it could be a lot of symbolism, but less substance. So we will see tomorrow. And I think another factor, not that not that it's likely to change whatever Putin was planning, but you know, I think he's going to want to somehow deliver a rebuke, or you know, some kind of a rebuke to Biden after Biden's trip visit to Kyiv today. And presumably that means that, among other things, Putin will have a lot to say about civilization and kind of talk up his narrative about how the West is bad and Russia is good. But we'll see whether it amounts to much more than that.
Oh, Steve, by the way, in recent months, I would say, they actually, the state propaganda in Russia portrayed the war in Ukraine as, you know, the war with the West rather than with Ukraine itself. And I can see, reading the Russian media, I can see that this motto becomes more and more popular because Russians actually start to question the aims of Russian operation in what they call operation in Ukraine, and some question why Russians have to die fighting with the people or with the nation that they consider to be brotherhood, you know. So this fighting against the West, and particularly against the U.S., is very, very popular for among the Russian propaganda now.
Yes, absolutely. That's a very good point that I should have made also. And it has increased. Some of the sort of chief propagandists of the Kremlin, or you know, of people who are close to the Kremlin, have been talking that up a lot lately. You know, the idea that this is not an offensive, this is not a war of aggression against Ukraine, which, you know, as you say, I mean, even Putin has said Ukrainians and Russians are one people, which isn't true, and that Ukrainians, you know, that's one thing that makes Ukrainians angry, rightfully so, but it's also a reason why, well, you know, Russians might question, why are we killing them? So, you know, as you say, I think there's a big shift to kind of portray this as not a war of aggression against Ukraine, but a war that's necessary to defend Russia against you know, against NATO and the United States, which are acting through Ukraine to destabilize and even destroy Russia. You know, which isn't true either. But I do think it's an important point. So presumably we'll hear more of that in tomorrow's speech. All right. Well, thanks very much. And my second question is essentially the same, but it's about the war. As Russia's large-scale invasion enters its second year, there are very few signs that it could end anytime soon. What will you be watching for, whether it's developments on the battlefield, diplomacy, Western support for Ukraine, or the situation in Russia?
Well, I think that all three is very important. Of course, the development on the battlefield is very important because up till now, Russia actually didn't gain that much territory and was quite unsuccessful. In recent months, it lost actually half of what it gained over the year. And that's something that Russian authorities cannot hide anymore. The number of Russian troops killed is also becoming more and more alarming. For the Russian population, there is a lot of kind of protest. It's a strange protest that you cannot even call it a protest, because families and relatives of those who were mobilized and sent to the front without proper munition, without proper equipment, protest not the fact that their husbands and sons were sent to kill in Ukraine, but the fact that they were sent without proper equipment. So you cannot really call it a protest, but it's the first sign that Russians are not happy with what's going on, which is an interesting development, of course, and worth monitoring. Usually I see a lot of those posts recently in social media. Usually they are greeted with a lot of hatred, both from Ukrainian side and from the side of Russian opposition. But it is an interesting development worth monitoring. The economy is not in a good shape. The new tax on business, on large business, which is touching actually all the businesses in Russia up to the middle size business, is also an indicator that the budget is not doing great, even though it's difficult to predict because the budget was locked. There is no data published anymore, so we cannot really say what's going on with the with the Russian budget. But the measures that Kremlin is taking right now to get some extra money from business show that things are not going well. The military help to Ukraine is very important, of course, because we understand that Ukraine will not be able to resist Russian aggression as successfully as it does right now. Without military help, you cannot just compare the two military, military arsenals of two countries. Russia is huge compared to Ukraine, but Ukraine is defending its country, its statehood, its people, and showing great bravery in doing this. So any military help for Ukraine is worth monitoring and taking into consideration. And one more thing that probably is interesting, of course, I will monitor the mood in Russia, me personally, because I think little by little, but something is changing. For example, today, the prominent opposition leader, Alexei Navalny, who is in jail after he returned to Russia 2 years ago, he published in Twitter, he published a program of what should be done in order to bring Russia back to the international community. And of course, the first item is to stop the war. But then among the measures that Navalny suggests is an interesting one. He suggests that Russia should return back and recognize the borders of 1991. And that means not only give back Ukraine, Donbass and Donetsk and Luhansk areas, but also Crimea. And, even 2 years ago, stating publicly that Crimea should be back, should be given back to Ukraine was practically impossible because that would, for a politician, because that would have turned people against you. Because, yes, majority of Russians really considered Crimea Russian territory and supported Putin in the annexation move. But right now, Navalny is publishing it publicly. And that actually shows a change that's going on in Russian, public mind that allows people now to speak openly, even about the return of Crimea. That's actually something new.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Yes, thanks very much. I would just to try to follow up on your remarks on you know the developments sort of in the on the battlefield and inside Russia and in the West. I guess one kind of theme that runs through all that, and what Navalny's saying too, is the idea that you know I think most analysts believe that you know Russia's initial intention was to take Kiev and subjugate Ukraine by overthrowing the government essentially. That's not didn't happen, and I think the you know the prospect for that happening very very small, and that now Putin's main hope is for the unity of the West and support from the West to dissipate and to flag and then allowing Russia to get the upper hand. And part of that is you know part of the some of the factors that go into that are the Russian economy and of course the situation on the battlefield. So you know this year that's arbitrarily, I guess, starting now as the second year of the invasion begins, you know, will clearly be very, very important. You know, Biden's trip to Kiev, an attempt to show that this Western unity will not flag. We're getting short on time, but we can take a few questions if there are any. So, Happy to take a question or two or three. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions. Just give it a moment, but we can start to wrap it up. Irina, as always, thanks very much for your insights. I think you've shed a lot of light on what's happening. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure.
All right. Once again, I've been speaking to Irina Logunina, Associate Standards Editor and former Director and Special Projects Editor of the Russian Service here at RFERL. And my name is Steve Gutterman, Editor for Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus in the Central Newsroom at RFERL. As I mentioned at the start, this conversation will also be published as a podcast, and you can subscribe to The Week Ahead in Russia and other RFERL podcasts on Apple, Spotify, Google, and other podcast platforms. I'll be back next Monday for another installment of The Week Ahead in Russia, and please keep an eye out for the next edition of my newsletter, The Week in Russia. Thanks for listening.